quite informal talk, and this result here is still kind of work in progress, but I think it's interesting enough that maybe we can have some discussion, and or maybe we can switch to something else afterwards. So this is joint work with one of the grad students at Utah, Dan, and Anna and Gordon, and Timo are from Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and then Valar Pascucci, also from Ski Institute. And what we're interested in is sort of developing some sort of topological inspired sampling techniques. And the motivation is as follows. So in the National Lab, they always have this large simulation code where they want to model complicated phenomena where a certain level of uncertainty exists. For example, this is for climate simulation. So what they end up having is they have a large simulation code with many input parameters and many output parameters, and they don't understand what exactly the function should look like in terms of weather prediction, but they can run it for a couple of days to generate a very limited set of sampling points. So the idea will be, how can we understand those sort of high-dimensional parameter space? And one common technique they do is assuming that it's a high-dimensional scalar function, where the dimension coming from the multiple input variables. And in terms of weather simulation, one of the interesting output parameters they look at is, for example, temperature. So this is essentially what people do to help politicians to make decisions. They say, well, we did following weather simulation, and here is how you want to make policies regarding carbon emission and things like that. However, on the other hand, those sort of high-dimensional simulation is very costly. So running a single simulation might take hours to days. So the question is that how do you efficiently sample the input domain such that you most likely put simulation towards interesting regions where you learn something from of the high-dimensional function. So that's all boiled down to what we call choosing the right points. So here is a very simple example. If my true function, this is a 2D example, if my true function looks like this, but initially I have no idea what the initial point, initial function looks like, what it boils down to is we randomly sample the initial domain. So here I have four instances where each time I sample some random 10 points from the domain, and then then here is what I use a prediction model to try to predict the underlying function might look like from those 10 training points. But of course, depending on where you sample the points, what you end up learning is drastically different from actually the true response. For example, this is a standard technique people do. If you don't have no prior knowledge of the initial data set, how do you sample the model? Of course, you would like to sample it usually through a space filling technique. So that is how it works. I just sample randomly. Usually we use Latin Hypercube to sample the initial domain. And then based on the initial training set, we can run a prediction model and to predict based on those training points what the maybe underlying function might look like. And to add more points to this, again we run another random sample which randomly choose this part of the domain to be added. Then now with together with the training point and extra candidate point, we refit the model. So I can do this for extra 5 more points. And each time after I add a candidate point, I run the true simulation and using the extra information to refit the model. So I can do this 5 more times, and you can see gradually the prediction of the function changes a little bit. So however, because I am choosing randomly my candidate points, so based on my initial fit, even I refit the model after adding extra 5 candidate points, you can see that we have not learned much from the additional sample. Yes?
Do you have any constraints on the number of points you use
to sample? You mean the initial training points or the candidate points?
The initial training.
Okay, so here I think the initial training point is 30 points. So it depends, how do you choose number of initial training points depends on the complexity of the function and the dimension of the function. So usually in low dimension, you know, for the like 20, 30 will work. Hopefully the function isn't very difficult. It's usually a guess. And you can using some prior knowledge, you can also try to learn how many in this dimension with this complexity you might have. But in high dimension, you need to increase the initial training point drastically to be able to learn even remotely some sort of geometry of the function. But here is just an example in two dimensions. So as we see that, if we just randomly sample candidate points, we obtain models that does not, we did not get much information, extra information from extra samples. So that is actually the motivation of people what commonly do to do adaptive sampling. But instead of doing adaptive sampling, we want to do topological inspired adaptive sampling as follows. So now, again, recall that we have 30 initial points, and we've refit the prediction model. Now I'm using some topological scoring function, which I will explain later in detail. By using that scoring function, I start sample more points that is has the most topological impact. So for example, here I sampled a point somewhere around sort of this ridge, the end of this ridge here. And further, as I sample more and more points, actually after three sample points, you can see that based on my new scoring function, the model is starting to behave more and more like the initial underlying ground truth. So again, I can sample further points, and after 5 points, this is what I obtained using adaptive sampling. So what I end up getting benefit from those topologically inspired adaptive sampling is we actually tend to sample points from places that has much more topological impact. So this is a comparison. This is the initial prediction model based on the training set, and this is after 5 space filling sampling what the model looks like, and this is what the model looks like after adaptive sampling based on topological score. Okay, so in adaptive sampling, what you do is you have an initial prediction model trained from the candidate's points, and then you can sample, say, 1,000 points from that prediction model. And then based on the 1,000 point, you can derive a score. The classic scoring function is based on sort of distance or prediction error. Or one of the most simple one is you want to sample the next point the furthest away from any existing training point. That's one example of the classic, yeah. And then here we're using different scoring function, which is topologically inspired, and I will explain it in detail later. But yeah, I haven't got to that detail yet. This is just a motivation. So as we could see that if you look at what our extra samples added, space filling sample added in random locations, while topologically inspired samples were in and around what we consider interesting topological features. So, and of course you can compare it to the true function response. So this is what we can get from this simple example, and what we really want is we would like to score the candidate's point based on their topological impact. And what do I mean by that? So one thing we use to measure topological impact is a simplicial complex commonly used in visualization as well as in computational topology. It's called Morse-Snell complex, and this is an example of it in 2D. Morse-Snell complex is a decomposition of the domain of a scalar function into monotonic regions. So for example, in here on the left is we based on the gradient flow from the maximum, we can decompose the domain into what we call stable manifold. And then similarly, we can decompose the domain into unstable manifold based on the gradient flow towards the minimum. And the intersection of the stable and unstable manifold creates what we call a Morse-Snell complex, where each cell in the Morse-Snell complex corresponding to uniform gradient flow. However, if you see this example here, some of the cells corresponding to critical points maybe not of importance significance. That's why we need to use what we call persistence. And you were seeing from last week, so I might even skip the quick introduction about persistence. So what it boils down to, you measure the birth and death of critical points, and then match them in terms of pair them up in terms of persistence. And that's a quick animation of how they are paired for the 1D function. And then this is what we end up getting is if you trace the sublevel set and track the number of components as the as the function increases, then the maxima is paired with minimum, and then correspondingly this pair is also paired with one another, and that corresponding to what we call the persistence diagram, where each point in there corresponds to the birth and the death of a topological feature. And of course, if you measure the death time minus the birth time, that corresponding to the actual persistence, which corresponds to the significance of a topological feature. And this is actually an example of what will happen in persistence implication in the 2D for more smell complex, that as we can see here, we have two maximum that is separated by a minimum, or by a saddle, and those are the minimum. And what I can do is I can canceling the maximum with a saddle, and that corresponding to a local simplification of the more smell complex. And by doing this sort of simplification, we can measure the significance of features as well. So again, one extra information we need is what we call the bottleneck distance. That is, if I have two functions that is close to each other in a hop stroke distance, we can align their, we can find the bijection of their corresponding persistence diagram and define what we call a bottleneck distance, which essentially measure what is the largest difference in terms of their topological features. So this is actually what our general pipeline is. Initially, if we don't know anything about the function, we select some number of training data and run the simulation, so at each of those training points, we know the true response from the actual simulation. And then we fit this training data with a, what we call a prediction model. And what we do here is Gaussian process model. There's other models we can use. And after you fit with a Gaussian process model, we select, say, 1,000 points from the Gaussian prediction from the Gaussian process model and evaluate the values of each of the candidates based on the prediction model. So notice here, it almost costs you nothing, because evaluating a training point with a prediction model is really fast. So what after the evaluation, we'll select among all these points the one with the largest score based on some scoring function. And then, and of course, then once we select that candidate, we evaluate the actual evaluate at that point the actual true function response, and you add that point back to the initial set of training data and refit the prediction model. So our hope is each time we select a particular candidate point based on sort of scoring function, we always sample from regions of the most interest regions, or from regions that is least explored. So of course, one first step is how do we select initial training set. As I described before, the common technique we use is what's called knotting hypercube sampling. Essentially, you just try to fill the axis aligned hyperplanes evenly. And afterwards, we would like to fit the initial training points with what we call a Gaussian process model. And we choose Gaussian process model because it has certain nice properties. Of course, you can replace it with other regression model as well. One thing about Gaussian process model is it's a stochastic model that is based on training inputs as having normal distribution, and the input has multivariate normal distribution as well. And then to do comparison, we would like to compare our topological scoring function with existing classic scoring functions. And here are a few examples. Most of the classic scoring functions rely on geometric or statistical concept of the data. For example, one is called active learning MACK, which essentially you would always like to sample the next point with the highest frequency or within a low confidence region. Another version is called Delta, which you would like to try to sample points from the domain of the function with the steepest gradient. The third one is what we call expected improvement, which you select points with high uncertainty or large discrepancy. And lastly, all of those three classic scoring functions can be applied to with what we call distance penalty function. Yes. Latin hypercube. I don't know what Latin is, but I know what the hypercube means. But actually, I don't know what the, I know what hypercube intuitive name, but I don't know why it's called Latin hypercube. Is it called Latin square? Okay. I mean, I understood the hypercube is because you want to sample sort of evenly points in each hyperplane. No, no. It's a standard name people use in uncertainty quantification. So, okay, so here, all those three classic functions can be penalized by distance. That means if you apply the distance to a point and you penalize point that's closer to existing training point. So you have lower score if you're closer to some point that you already know. So here is what I can describe the three topological inspired scoring functions. One is what we call average change in persistence, topo OP, which measures average change in persistence between before and after inserting a candidate into more smell complex. And the intuition is we would like to find the point that has the largest impact in terms of the structure of the more smell complex. So here's the detail explanation. So let's say all those points here is my initial training point. I can build a more smell complex based on the initial training set. Now I have sampled 1,000 candidate points. I want to score them individually. So what I do is I insert the extra candidate point into the training point and build a more smell complex. So now I have a most complex before and after the insertion of that single candidate point. So of course, before and after each of the points, each of the critical points in my domain has, my function has a different persistence. So what we actually measure is we look at all the persistence changes and average them out and choose the candidate point. Yes. I want to choose a point with its addition changes the topology more drastically.
But after you added it, you already did all the computations.
No. This addition is evaluated based on prediction model, which is cheap. Yeah. That's why we can evaluate based on, say, 1,000 candidate points. But once you select this point, when you refit the model, you evaluate this candidate point based on the actual simulation and get the true response and add it, refit the model, add it to the initial training set and refit the model.
Do you have a hierarchy of prediction models?
What do you mean hierarchy of prediction? I'm not sure I understand what you mean. Can you say that again? If I have a hierarchy? So we have we can choose different prediction models. Here we choose a Gaussian prediction model, Gaussian process model. But there's other model. One common thing I think people use is called MARS, and we have a collection of it. Actually, I will mention towards the end. We are going to try to not all the time. So this kind of pipeline is dependent on how good your initial, also dependent on how good your initial prediction model is. So we are also investigating other prediction models. Okay, so this is the first scoring function where we want to measure how much changes has happened in terms of persistence when you add one additional point. And you score this across all candidates' points and find the one with the highest change in average persistence. Oh, no. This is the first scoring function called average change in persistence. So what's involving is you need to compute the most smell complex of the initial training point and compute the multinodal complex of the training point with the added extra candidate point. And then, yeah, you have to evaluate for each candidate point and find the one with the highest score. And the score is based on the average change persistence. No, the second scoring function is based on diagram. The first one is only based on point-wise persistence change. You are one step ahead of me. Okay, so the second scoring function is based on bottleneck distance change before and after inserting a candidate point into the multinodal complex. And the general idea is the following. I have the initial multinodal complex based on training points, and now I have a multinodal complex with a candidate point I would like to evaluate a scoring on. So I insert this point, compute a new multinodal complex. Before and after insertion, each of the multinodal complex has a corresponding persistence diagram, like here. And I measure, essentially, the bottleneck distance between those persistence diagrams. And point E scores the highest if this bottleneck distance is high. So what that really means is, intuitively, if there's a high bottleneck distance between two functions, we kind of consider that to be a major topological impact with the insertion of the new point. Okay? So this is the last scoring function we use, which is called highest persistence, and it's a slightly different from the previous two. What we do is, again, we train the initial point we compute the multinodal complex of initial training sets, and I sample 1,000 points from the Gaussian prediction model. And among all the 1,000 points, together with the initial training point, we build a multinodal complex. And then we find the highest critical point in this new multinodal complex, and then return that as our candidate point. So this is what we think is the third topological scoring function that measures some sort of topological impact. And intuitively, we are hoping that if we are a simple sort of launching hyperkube from the domain and build multinodal complex, the point return will be from regions with interesting topology but hasn't been sampled before. Okay, so here's some of the initial tests we've done so far. All those functions here can be generalized in high dimension. I'm only plotting the lower dimensional plot. The first function here is what we call generalized diagonal function, where we place maxima and minima interchangeably along diagonal of the domain. And then this is called X-ray, where they have some kind of interesting topological features. And also we have modified Lagrange Nangerman, where there's most of the topological features is concentrated in a subdomain of the function. And of course we have some other functions that what we consider have interesting topological features. And this one is actually not quite, it's an interesting function, but topologically it doesn't have much features, and we want to use it as a comparison. And of course, the last one is what we call it Whitley, and I don't know if this works well, but you know, there's a lot of small minimum maximum going large in this critical region. So one thing we actually concentrate on is this diagonal function, because one, it can be generalized to high dimension, but also we can arbitrarily put finite number of maxima and minima along the diagonal and look at how our topological scoring function behaves. And this is the plot we use to evaluate the topological scoring function. So on the y-axis, this is what we call average root mean square prediction error improvement. So what we do is, once you added, and an x-axis is number of candidate points you added, meaning that I at one point refit the model, and at a second point refit the model. And what we look at is, before and after refitting of the model, we first look at the average mean square prediction error. And then we look at how it's improved over time, but we average it over 10 different trials. So all those points in here, average over 10 different trials with different initial training points. So as we can see from here, those three correspond to our topologically inspired scoring function, and the rest is a classic one. And of course, what's obvious is that if I have a two maxima along the diagonal in 2D, our topological scoring function don't behave that well. And our argument is that maybe the features, we don't have enough topological features for us to benefit from the new scoring function. But as we increase the number of maxima along the diagonal, we can see slowly that how our topological scoring functions start to behave better and better. So I suppose, just remind you, this is RMST improvement. That means the steeper it is, the better it behaves, the better improvement it has. So can you tell those three different colors? Yes. Well, actually, okay. All right. So this is two maxima on main diagonal in 2D, but we can even bump up the dimension even higher, where now I have 30 maxima along main diagonal in 5 dimension. Of course, here the picture should just give you an idea how the function looks like in 2D. So in here, of course, our topological-inspired scoring functions start behaving better and better. But of course, not all functions will behave well with the topological scoring function. One example is what we call the Rosenbrock. In 4D, now our topological-inspired scoring function scores really high. That's because we kind of suspect that because there's not enough features in here that our method will benefit from. And here's one more example where it's a different function in 5 dimension, where again some of our scoring functions scores has a pretty good improvement compared to other functions. So to compare all our results, what we do is we call this parallel plot. And what we have is on the x-axis is all different functions we have tested, and then here it shows the dimension of those functions. And on y-axis is how different scoring functions rank with that function. And of course, the solid lines correspond to the topological scoring function. So for example, in here, in 2D, two maxima along the diagonal, our topological scoring function is ranked number 6, 7, and 8. So it's not doing very well, but we can look at this trend as an increased dimension, where, for example, some of our scoring functions start to behave better. Again, you can observe this trend further in 4 dimensions as well as in 5 dimensions. Okay. So one conclusion we have so far is there's no single scoring function that will behave best consistently across dimension and across different functions. And we're planning to investigate a little bit more on what kind of function topology-inspired scoring function will benefit from. So one last trick is actually what Herbert asked before, is that sometimes this sort of pipeline is highly dependent on the prediction model and how good the prediction model is. If by some chance your initial prediction model is really bad, you can't really improve, so the fit is really bad with the initial training point, you can't really improve it over time with adding more and more points. So for example, in here, this is one of the testing examples, and then on the left is essentially the initial fit of Gaussian prediction model. Notice that it's almost fitting this function as if it's a plane, and all these little dots here are actually the training point, and the plane is actually the fit of the initial training point. And on the right is, even you add 20 extra more points, the Gaussian process model still do not give you a good fit. So that leads to some of our future work, is essentially using different prediction model and see how they behave with our scoring function. And of course, we would like to investigate a different metric for measuring effectiveness of the adaptive sampling. I mean, one thing people use is root mean square prediction error, but it's quite limited. It doesn't really tell you what we want to look at. Essentially, we want to measure some sort of topological change, and this is not sufficient as what we consider right now. And of course, we would like to investigate more scoring function that measure topological impact. And one thing we're thinking of right now is sort of looking at how much it's changing graph Laplacian. But what we can learn from this is still up in the air. So lastly, this is our ultimate goal, but we think it's really hard, is to understand what sort of what we call function classification problem. It's as I showed before, we've seen that if you have a function, we suspect if you have a function in high dimension that has enough topological features, then it will benefit from this sort of a scoring function. However, to quantify such topological complexity remains an unknown problem to us. So, and of course, our ultimate goal is to embed this sort of topological scoring function in standard UQ package, uncertainty quantification package, because right now all they're using is, like I showed before, those classic scoring functions. So we're hoping that at least topological inspired scoring function should be part of the standard package to help people understand high dimensional scalar function, how to sample the domain effectively. So that's the end.